Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and in this podcast, we bring you candid and soulful conversations about all facets of sexuality. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Good Clean Love, for helping make this podcast possible. Good Clean Love makes amazing organic lubricants and sexual wellness products that we love and we know you will love too. Go to goodcleanlove.com and use the code PLEASURE for 33% off your entire order, and we'll tell you more about them later in the show. Remember that you can find a complete podcast archive at pleasuremechanics.com. And while you are there, sign up for the Erotic Essentials. It is our free offering to you. We used to call it a mini course, but there's nothing mini about it anymore. It is a beautiful wealth of resources designed to help you create a stronger foundation for your sexuality. Go to pleasuremechanics.com/free and sign up for the Erotic Essentials. We'd love to have you on board. On today's episode, we want to talk about one of the most important concepts to understand your sexual desire. It's the difference between spontaneous desire and responsive desire, and the importance of context for everyone's desire to emerge. This question of desire is a big one, right? How much do you want sex? When are you in the mood for sex? What is your libido? We get questions about this all the time because our culture has a lot of incorrect and damaging messages about the nature of desire. So we want to set some things clear and give you new language to think about and talk about your desire and your appetite for sexual intimacy and sexual pleasure. And before we jump in, I do want to mention a lot of these ideas come to us via Emily Nagoski, who is an amazing writer who takes the science of sexuality and goes into this sexual geekery of the research and then pulls out the messages that are most important for us all to learn. Her book, Come As You Are, is an amazing book. We've done interviews with her that you can find on our website. And an episode you also want to make sure you've listened to is episode 227, where we break down the idea of turn-ons and turn-offs and the dual control model of arousal, meaning when you get aroused, it's both the things that turn you on, your gas pedal, and the things that turn you off, your brake pedal, that end up dictating your experience of that sexual encounter. And that for most people, there's way too much pressure on the brakes rather than not enough turn on, right? So that's an essential episode to listen to, episode 227, Manage Your Turn-Ons and Turn-Offs. And that's also inspired by Nagoski's book. So make sure you've listened to that before you launch into this episode or after. They really are a pair of episodes that you should listen to and process together. Okay, so into spontaneous versus responsive desire. When our culture talks about sex for the most part and libido, there's this idea that you're just walking down the street and all of a sudden your sex drive kicks in and you're like, I want sex, I'm horny. And that experience of just randomly being horny throughout the day is actually pretty infrequent, and it's primarily a male experience. And there's a lot of cultural reasons for this that we'll get into later, but when people, especially women, don't experience random spontaneous arousal and this idea of being horny all the time, it's problematized and named a dysfunction. But Nagoski reminds us that the science is revealing that there are more than one type of desire. There's spontaneous desire and responsive desire, and both are valid and legitimate and useful to think about, and that we all experience both. And that for all of us, all kinds of arousal is context dependent. It's much easier to get aroused when you're relaxed and your mind isn't rushing with a million things and you're in a beautiful environment and you're calm. And then arousal has a lot more space to arise in your body, whether spontaneous or responsive. But if you're sitting in rush hour traffic or rushing to work or dealing with crying kids, dealing with financial stress, all of these burdens that life puts on us, there's not a whole lot of space in your brain to prioritize getting aroused. And so for many of us living in this stressful life right now, especially with so much in the news and global stressors happening, this idea of just spontaneously being horny feels very elusive. And this is a cultural issue, and yet individuals are writing to us scared that their sex drive has gone away, that they have low libido, that something is wrong with them specifically. When really we need to rethink our entire conversation about what desire even means and how it's experienced in the context of day-to-day life.
Whew. Yeah, because stress is a survival mechanism. So when we experience stress, our body is basically tells itself, no, I'm not in the mood for sex. I'm not available for sex. I'm focused on my survival, people. We need to get everything going. We need to survive. And there's just not space for our body chemistry to get interested in sex. So,
yes, you're not going to luxuriate in the pleasures of eroticism when there's a million things on your to-do list and there's not even space to think about sex, let alone set aside time to enjoy it. So that idea of your body immediately kicking into this spontaneous desire of like, yeah, I'm ready, let's fuck, that's not going to happen when you're stressed out and burdened.
It's just unrealistic. So you got to be calm with yourself and let yourself know that there's nothing wrong with you. You haven't lost your libido. You just don't have the context for creating, for your body to feel interested.
Although some people, a small percentage of people do respond to stress with horniness.
Yes.
It's like a strange twist on their own survival mechanism. Like, there's so much going on, let's fuck.
Right.
So if that happens to you, that's also normal.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, sex is deprioritized when life gets busy.
And just to complicate that, I just want to say that the spontaneous desire that we were speaking about, people report this about 75% of men experience that, and about 15% of women experience spontaneous desire.
So it's some of the time.
Some of the time. So it's also normal for men not to experience spontaneous desire.
Right.
Right. So this is all the complicated layers and nuances of sex, which basically is letting us all know that whatever you experience is normal.
Yes, and okay. And then this idea of responsive desire. This is the one that's not spoken about. And sometimes, as I discovered in my research for this episode, it's spoken about in really problematic ways.
Yes.
Okay, so let's break down responsive desire. So responsive desire is the idea that if you're in a fairly relaxed and neutral space in life, and you are approached by a safe, appropriate mate, perhaps your long-term lover, and sexual stimuli begins from the outside. So your lover looks at you in that special way, they compliment you, your lover takes your hand or starts massaging your shoulders or cuddles up to you on the couch. That external stimuli starts evoking desire in you. Your brain gets into a feedback loop where it recognizes something pleasurable is happening, and then it starts wanting a little more, and then something else pleasurable happens, and then it wants a little more. And that this can cascade into full-blown arousal and desire.
But that's important. It's important to note that it doesn't go from getting a little input that feels a little sexy to, oh my God, I want sex right now. It just becomes, oh, this is kind of interesting. Oh, I'd kind of like a little bit more. So it's sort of a gentle awakening of desire.
Yeah, there's a snowball effect, and anything can interrupt that.
Yeah.
So you can be kind of being evoked, and your desire can start being responsive, and you can start being interested, and then your partner farts or says something rude, or the kid comes in,
your mother calls.
These are whatever. All those turnoffs that yeah. brake pedal can slam on your desire at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so what do we do with this information? What do we do with this idea that desire can be evoked from your partner
slowly through an input of sexy,
pleasurable, consensual stimulation?
Yeah.
Because the article I read, when I prepare for an episode, I often do research to see what's out there, what are the ideas we want to share in addition to what we already know,
mm-hmm.
right? And I ended up on this Christian sex site. And we have a lot of Christian listeners. I actually just heard from one recently who gave me a list of all the things he agrees with us about and all the things he doesn't. Thank you for that. We love hearing from you. And we love our Christian listeners. But sometimes the Christian narratives about sex are really wonky. And so this site was saying, because of responsive desire, anytime the male experiences spontaneous desire, the woman needs to be obliging and willing. And with the help of lubricant, intercourse can begin and then she'll enjoy it later.
That is not a good idea.
This is a total misinterpretation of this idea. And it basically, again, prioritizes the male sexual desire and, like, the emphasis on intercourse and that a woman just needs to be this passive, willing receptacle and that maybe she'll enjoy it if she just, like, lets herself enjoy it. That's not how it works, folks. Okay, so the pleasure mechanics version of responsive desire is constant, low-level, non-pressure foreplay.
Zero expectation, drips of pleasure, and sexy stimuli.
In our foreplay mastery course, we talk about this idea of all-day foreplay. So how to create the context in your relationship where you can constantly be evoking pleasure from one another. You can constantly be flirting and being affectionate and teasing to draw out this responsive desire in a completely no agenda kind of way. And so you might give a really beautiful hug before leaving for work that day. And that leaves your partner feeling this glow of feeling loved and held. You might constantly be sharing words of affection and affirmation and telling your partner how meaningful your relationship is. You might be sending naughty texts and sexting. You might be sharing a lot of physical affection and cuddles and massage. And what this does is it creates a context in your relationship that when one of you is feeling amorous, is feeling desire, you can then start evoking it from your partner and just see where you want to meet in that moment. And with this menu that we often talk about, the open-ended buffet of sexual options, where an intimate encounter might just be cuddling on the couch and kissing necks a little bit and feeling a little aroused, and then you move on with your day. Or it might be one of you gets genital stimulation and has an orgasm, but not both of you. Or it might be full-blown intercourse, or it might be a bondage session, or it might be erotic spanking. When you have all of these menu options and there's no agenda, there's no expectation that if I start feeling turned on, I then have to have intercourse. Because for a lot of women, this is the stopping point. They start feeling nice and responsive to your touch, and they start feeling a little desire and aroused, but something in their mind goes, I don't have time for sex, or my body's not feeling very good right now, or my vagina isn't feeling super happy.
Or I'm not ready for sex right now.
Or I'm not ready for sex in this moment, and if I say yes, we're going to rush to that. And that's not what my body wants, so no thank you, honey. And you push them away, and you refuse the sex, you give a rejection, and then that starts this downward cascade.
Because even if they've started the turn-on, if she's not in that wanting it right now yet, she just could need more time before penetration. This is the distinction from the Christian suggestions, that we really do not recommend ever starting penetration before the body is so ready for it. So we really recommend exploring all of that foreplay, all of the play, all of the before people, you know, the stuff that people think of that happens before sex. We think it's all sex, so it's complicated. But you know what I'm saying.
Full body stimulation, full body massage, kissing, oral sex, using hands to penetrate. The act of putting a penis in a vagina should only happen when the vagina is really ready for it, because that makes it much more pleasurable for her, much more exciting for him, and you actually get to have good intercourse. We are not anti-intercourse in any way, but it should be reserved for those moments where the vagina really wants something of size inside of it, right? For centuries, for thousands of years, the penis has had license to enter a female body that wasn't ready for it. And guys, if it's hard for you to wrap your head around this, just imagine being penetrated anally when you didn't want it. It's a violation. It's a forced entry into your body. And this is why women have so many issues with sex. Not the only reason, but it's a huge reason, because women have been enduring sex that they didn't want to be having for far too long. And we're just at the cultural moment where this is starting to shift. And we need to be, all of us, serious advocates for penetration upon permission. I think I just made that up. But it's consensual penetration. It's when the female body, because when you want penetration, it's this amazing feeling of like, come inside, not come like ejaculate, but enter me now, get inside me, join me in this interior space of my body, which is such a beautiful thing. And that can be fingers, it can be a tongue, it can be a toy, or it can be a penis. But when the body wants to be penetrated, either vaginally or anally or orally, really, then that feeling of union with their two bodies coming in together in that way is exquisite. It's beautiful. But when it's not wanted,
or just not ready yet.
And not ready yet. And that's the thing. It's not that she doesn't want you. It's that it's not ready yet.
Her body isn't warmed up enough
yet. Yeah, we need 15, 20, 25 minutes, 30
minutes
of full body arousal and desire building
to allow that responsive desire to wake up. And that is so normal.
And so powerful.
Yes.
Right? It's such a powerful idea that if you slow way down and stay in that open-ended, affectionate pleasure loop where it's like, I'm giving you stimulation and then you're giving me stimulation and we're building this desire together, then when penetration happens, it's delightful and exciting and can be orgasmic for both of you. And you've already activated the full body, so you experience pleasure throughout the full body, and you've already activated the clitoris, and the clitoris has become engorged. And here again, let's remember that the clitoris has just as much erectile tissue as the penis.
And it needs time to all get fully woken up.
Yeah. When the clitoris becomes fully engorged and fully woken up, it's a deep internal structure, and so the whole pussy, the whole vaginal canal, the labia, all of that tissue that has so much pleasure potential gets lit up. And so when you're stroking in and out, when you're having intercourse, that's touching all of that beautifully erect, engorged tissue with all of those nerve endings. And it becomes really delightful and pleasurable. Okay. So this is responsive desire at work in the best case scenario, is a long-term, low-level feedback loop of pleasure, of affection, of consent, of respecting one another's yeses and nos, of taking care of one another, so that you can find pockets of time where affectionate touch can then turn into more pleasurable touch, more passionate touch, and then take you into these states of erotic stimulation that may or may not lead to orgasm, but this high level of arousal, and your entire relationship is the context where that arousal happens. And I want to talk more about context-dependent arousal. And right now I want to thank our sponsors. Good Clean Love have sponsored this podcast because together we believe in this mission of creating a world where there's more love and more pleasure and more enjoyment of the beauty of our human sexuality. Good Clean Love creates a beautiful product line of organic personal lubricants, of beautiful aromatherapy to create that sensual smell bridge for sex. Like, these are ways you can adorn your body and create another pleasurable stimuli for one another. And now they've also released a line called BioMatch, which is a wash and lubrication system that is scientifically matched to the vaginal environment, both in pH balance and in salt content, which I think is a lovely addition. And I've been using these products in the past few weeks. It's a really lovely addition to a self-care ritual of a shower to have a product that's specifically designed to take care of your vaginal environment. And because you shouldn't be using soap down there. You shouldn't just lather up with your body wash and put that in and around your labia and vagina. It's not good for it. And water's okay, but it's nice to have a product that's specifically designed to take care of your genitals.
Mm.
The BioMatch system is really lovely, and we love Good Clean Love's lubricants. So go check them out at goodcleanlove.com and use the code PLEASURE for 33% off your entire order. They are hooking you up. That's goodcleanlove.com. Use the code PLEASURE. And if you're interested in the BioMatch cleansing system, they have an amazing subscription box package where every other month you get shipped a package. It's 50% off retail price already. Use the code PLEASURE for 33% off additionally, and you will have a beautiful, healthy vaginal ecosystem for a beautiful price. What could be better? Thanks, Good Clean Love, for sponsoring this podcast. And this is an interesting bridge, because the question of lubrication, there's this myth that if her body is responding, if she's getting aroused, then she'll naturally be lubricating, and that wetness is a sign of female arousal, just like hardness is a sign of male arousal. And this is a myth. There are all sorts of things that can be happening in the body that make lubrication not happen, even when she's really aroused, even when her clitoral tissue is engorged. And having lubricant on hand is beautiful for penetration, but it's also beautiful for external stimulation, for touching the clitoris, for gliding over all of the genital tissues. So bringing lubricant into your play early for clitoral stimulation can really help that touch feel better, and can also just help moisturize the area. And it's not a replacement for arousal. This is what I was so annoyed about at the Christian site, where they said, like, just use lube and she doesn't need to be aroused before you penetrate. That's not the idea here. It's a addition to arousal. It's a tool to get more aroused. And it's a way to replenish moisture that might not be happening in the vagina, even if you're fully aroused. And it's absolutely necessary for anal play, no matter how aroused you are, because the anal doesn't self-lubricate. So lube is a tool for helping arousal happen and for facilitating play. It's not a replacement for arousal. So this is the idea we want to leave you with, that spontaneous desire is delicious when it happens. And I do want to talk about how to give it more attention and permission so it can happen more often. Because that feeling of walking around in the world and then all of a sudden feeling your sexuality rise is a delight.
Mm.
It's a beautiful thing. And when you start paying attention to what triggers that, because spontaneous desire doesn't just happen like out of nowhere in the brain. There's some thought, there's some memory, there's some sensory stimulation that can trigger it. And when you start paying attention to it and giving it permission, and I think this is a conversation too. Why do men have more spontaneous desire?
There are so many reasons. One is they are allowed to. They are given license to feel sexual. Like, it is okay to feel sexual. They are allowed to. There's a feedback loop where it makes them feel virile and powerful, and it's
what men are supposed to feel,
right? It's yeah. Good to feel sexual. You're a man, you know, to feel sexy and sexual. Whereas I feel like women have been taught for so many years that their sexual desire is not safe. It could lead them into trouble, which could have them lose their entire life, which is what has happened historically for many women. You shut that down. You have a job to procreate and to keep your legs closed. You know, this,
you're taking care of all these other people in your life, and so what right do I have to feel desire? There's a lot of cultural scripts around desire that give male-bodied people a lot more permission to have that spontaneous experience of desire. But we all have it in moments, and when you do have it, to give it a little more space, to give it a little more time and attention and curiosity, and notice those thoughts come up. And what is it that prompted that? because those are good cues, good information about your sexual maps, your sexual constellation of pleasures.
And turn-ons.
Yeah, and for me, often when I'm out in nature and the wind hits the back of my head in just the specific way, or the sun hits my skin, those are moments where I can feel really sexy all of a sudden out of nowhere. Mm. And I notice that it's just that pleasure of my body in the world. And when I'm feeling relaxed and happy, that often happens. Or when you see someone out in public that prompts sexual thoughts, notice that and go into it just a little bit. You don't have to stop everything you're doing and jerk off under the table. It's just being a little mentally curious about what is it about that person that made me feel some sexual thoughts.
And get, yeah, letting yourself feel a little space. Don't feel like you need to cut it off immediately because it's not safe. You shouldn't be feeling that. You feel shame. Just take a breath and notice, get curious about your own brain. Uh-huh. And you're in a time and in a space where you're permitted to allow yourself to just have that thought.
And then you'll notice that spontaneous desire might happen more often.
Mm.
When we give ourselves permission to have this internal rising of desire, that's a beautiful experience. But it's not the only experience that can lead to arousal. And this other experience of responsive desire, of context-specific desire. So this context means both your physical environment, what's around you. You know, are you in a loud, noisy dance club with lots of sweaty bodies? That's one context. Versus sitting quietly at church, that's another context. Versus your job, where you're expected to perform in specific ways. These are all environmental contexts. But context also is about your internal landscape, your mood, your health, your brain space. What are you thinking about? What are your to-do lists? What are your stressors? That's an internal context that really determines a lot of what arousal and desire can arise. And I definitely experienced this when I was getting sick and was in chronic pain. Like, chronic pain, and I really would like to have conversations about this more often, because so many people are in chronic pain. And when your body is hurting, it's very hard to make the bridge over to pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And to find enough pleasure to override that pain. And this isn't the pain of, like, a really good spanking, right? This is aches and pains in your bones, and your body doesn't feel healthy. And from that space, how do we find desire? How do we find the impetus to allow your body pleasure? If anyone has experiences with this, I'd love to hear from you. Please email me. But this is another context of where your body is at in your life. Social contexts. How many people are depending on you? How many people are you taking care of? It's not just kids anymore. It's aging parents. It might be neighbors. It might be your community. All of those demands on you take energy away from your own internal ability to prioritize your own desire and come up with the statements, I want to experience pleasure, I want to have an orgasm, right? So these are all contexts. And the most important context, I think, sometimes is your relationship. And that determines a lot of the desire you feel for your partner. How kind are you being to one another? How much respect are you showing one another? Are you working well as a team? Do you feel resentful and overburdened? Do you have, like, toxic emotions around one another? That your partner can stroke your back all they want, and your body's not going to respond with, ooh, more, yes, please, where you actually feel an internal recoil. Then you need to really focus on cleaning house in your relationship and creating a stronger context for sexual desire between the two of you to become a pleasurable loop.
Yes, and to complicate matters, sometimes you're just not in the space for it. The context is still feeling stressful with all of the different things pulling on your time and energy. And if you were to shift the context within the relationship, yes, emotionally, but also practically, you can begin to feel desire.
Meaning, like, leave your house and the kids and go to a hotel for the night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, prioritizing saying, yes, I am stressed out and I need a lot of time before I can think about sex. I need to work out. I need a bath. Right. I need you to massage me for probably an hour. And then I might be interested in sex.
Right.
And to know that about yourself, like, I am overwhelmed. Help me with this. I want to have sex with you. I care about you. Let's create a really big context that is effort and time and money, and then I will probably feel desire.
Uh-huh.
And that's also important to know. Like, how can you make the context sexier for you? How can you make it more interesting and desirable? What do you want, and how can you create it? There's nothing wrong with you. It's just that you need more sexy input because your life isn't feeling very sexy right now. Mm-hmm. And that's totally fine. But it does involve effort and thinking about these things and figuring out what does turn you on.
Right. So just to review that, we have all different kinds of context. There's the global context. What's going on in the whole world? What's going on in your environment around you, your social environment, where your body is located in time and space? There's relationship context. There's internal context. And all of these factors matter in how your desire is going to emerge and how much space your body can create for sexual pleasure. And when we know this, we can start working with these factors and prioritizing sexuality in a meaningful way. And that means focusing more on a healthy relationship. That means giving your body what it needs to feel a little bit healthier. Sometimes it means recognizing that you're in a period of sexual hibernation and it makes sense that your desire is nowhere to be found and there's other things you need to focus on, and that is okay. Your sexuality will come back and it might be changed. It might be different in a new era of life after you have kids that have reached 4 or 5 years old. A lot of the experts are saying that a couple's sex life is very much changed for the first 4 or 5 years. Until your youngest kid is 4 or 5 years old, do not expect a full, thriving sexual relationship. And with that information, what does that change in your relationship? How does that change the dialogue? Because so much of this is relieving you of the idea that you are broken.
Yeah.
That there is something wrong with you as an individual. There's just a lot wrong with how our culture talks about sex and the expectations we all have and the gendered norms of sexuality. That's what's broken, and that's what we're trying to address through this podcast and through our work at Pleasure Mechanics, is giving you a different context, a different understanding, a different language for how sexuality really shows up in our day-to-day lives, especially amongst this crazy world we're living in, where there's a lot of stress, a lot of burdens, a hectic life. Sometimes I fantasize about what it would be like to be, like, in a hut in a little village where we were just growing our own food and luxuriating in the sun. But I think that's a fantasy, right? Like, I don't know if that life was any less stressful, where you had to walk 10 miles to get clean water. But there's an idea that the stresses of modern day life are very hard on sexuality. But maybe humans have always struggled with sexuality. I'm not sure. But we want to relieve your struggle in some way. And we hope this conversation around desire and how desire really emerges for people and giving you permission to feel more desire both spontaneously and in response to the evoking of your partner's stimuli, of the opportunity for pleasure, to remember that you're cuddled up on the couch and that cuddle could become a massage. And that might be just what you need right now. And that massage could become erotic massage. And that might be just what you need right now. And that could become oral sex. And that might be just right. Like, what do you need right now to feel good and safe and pleasured in your body? And how do we create more of that? Because that's the currency of sexuality, right? Is that this feeling of attraction, desire, wanting, and then receiving the beautiful pleasure that we can offer one another as humans. Okay. So come on over to pleasuremechanics.com and investigate the treasure trove of resources we have for you to help you lead a more pleasurable life. Definitely sign up for our free course, The Erotic Essentials, which is basically a treasure chest of some of our best advice, some of our best podcast episodes, free worksheets, free resources, all of what we want to offer all of you. It's kind of our banquet that you are all invited to anytime you need. And from there, we can be in touch with one another. We can correspond. You can post comments and we'll post answers. We can really start building this dialogue about how pleasure lives in your life and how we can guide you into a more fulfilling erotic life. You can also explore the rest of our online courses. We have courses on foreplay mastery. We have courses on full body massage. If you want to learn the skills of giving an amazing massage, we have you covered. And then things like erotic spanking and kinky sex, we also have offerings on. So wherever you are in your desire, in your sense of what's next in your erotic life, we have something for you over at pleasuremechanics.com. Please join us there. Use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the course of your choice when you're ready to get started. And we are here for you. We'll see you next week with a brand new spanking episode. And also, we have an interview with Esther Perel coming up, which I'm super excited about. So that is coming up in mid-December, along with my birthday. It's like my birthday gift is getting to interview one of my favorite authors and mentors. Huzzah! All right, I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.